You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
Cynthia Flood's latest collection of short stories ranges in subject matter from left-wing life in Vancouver in the 1970s to the personal politics that exist within families. Throughout the stories, she remains most interested in what her characters don't know about the situations they find themselves in. Cynthia Flood has written 3 volumes of short stories and a novel. She won the Journey Prize for her story, My Father Took a Cake to France. Her fiction has been widely published in print and online, and her stories have been selected 4 times for Best Canadian Stories. Her new book is titled Red Girl, Rat Boy. It's published by Biblioasis. Cynthia Flood joins me in the studio this morning. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi, Jane.
Now, this is a very varied collection of stories. Is there any kind of thread running through them?
I don't really think there is. I mean, it's hard to find a positive term for, you know, grab bag or hodgepodge or gallimaufry, somebody said, which I have not yet to look. I have yet to look up, but I don't know that there is. I mean, they're all people who are having difficulties of various kinds, or trying to change things, or make things be different for themselves, and a lot of variation in place, time, age, narrative style, etc. Yes. So if you like a mixture, then you'll like this book.
So how does the idea for a story start?
In some cases, by seeing somebody or something. The story Eggs and Bones came from seeing a woman on the bus who I thought was actually quite ugly. And anyway, looking at her, I was drawn to think about her, and she turned into a person, and I wrote about her. And then when I'd written about her, I realized I needed to write about her husband also. So it became kind of a pair story, and I liked that form. I was pleased with that. And there's a story at the end of the book called The Hunter, which is about a leopard, an exotic animal that has been imported to Vancouver's east side and is kept in prison in a grow-op. And eventually, your hearers will be glad to know, escapes. Now, that came about because in 1987, my partner and I went to New Orleans on holiday, and we saw a leopard in the zoo there, a clouded leopard. And that poor animal was completely insane, as that's what she was. And the image stayed with me, and, you know, 20 years later, for some reason that I don't know about, walking through the streets of East Vancouver, where I used to live, her story arrived. So I don't know how that happens.
No. A wonderful mystery.
Yes.
Now, two of the stories deal with the left in Vancouver in the 1970s, something you've written about before. But you say that you think these stories succeed where the earlier stories didn't. What's different this time?
Well, for me, they do. We'll wait and see whether other people think so or not. But for me, they do. And I think partly because the one called Blue Clouds in particular, the narrator is someone who is not himself involved in left-wing political activity. He's a janitor in a building where a left-wing organization has its headquarters. So he is a cleaner. So essentially, he is an invisible observer. And I think that's partly why I think the story works. And also because it deals with the theme of refusing to recognize the truth about yourself, and that is true for the janitor, and it's also true for other people in the story. So those two things are kind of connected. But mostly I think it's the narrative viewpoint, and I think that the things I tried to write earlier, they tended to have principal characters who were themselves involved heavily in the women's movement or on the left, and it was very difficult to show more than what they thought or felt about the experience.
It's almost like there was too much of you coming through to make it a story.
Yeah, too much, or too much, too
you
much
or
insider.
Your friends, or
yeah, too much insider stuff. And the insider stuff is certainly important. But if you're on the inside of any organization, you have a view of it which is certainly not going to be the view of anybody on the outside. And so I think that was an important shift.
Is the point of view that you're going to tell a story from something that is a critical decision early on?
Yes, it has to be. I mean, I have occasionally had stories in which I've done a draft one way, third person or third person, decided, no, this isn't going to work. I need to turn it. I can only think of a couple of times, and not in this book, when I've had that experience. And unfortunately, it usually means that the energy that you put into the first one is wasted because you can't really transfer it to the second one. So it's kind of, well, sorry, but we're not doing that story. But I think it is important because there's a lot that immediately the choice tells you about what you can put in, what you can leave out, what this person will notice, what this person won't notice. Or doing a third person technique, you have to be careful with that too. And if that third person character isn't going to see or understand certain things, you're going to have another character who does and will say them or show them or whatever you want the reader to understand. So yes, it is a crucial first step.
You're a long time feminist, been very active in the women's movement, mm-hmm. as well as the left. Mm-hmm. How does your perspective as a feminist get expressed in these stories?
Not very explicitly, I don't think. I mean, there are a lot of women in this book who are certainly struggling with what being a woman and the roles of women mean. I mean, there's Kira in that Eggs and Bones story who's finding out how hard it is to be the ideal of the mother and the working woman and the happy partner and et cetera, et cetera. And she's completely torn up by that agenda. She really cannot do it. Julie in the story called Addresses, and that's a young woman who's kind of followed the script that society gave her for how to live her life, and has found that although she's done it in complete, trueness of heart, it's not working. It just is not working. And she can see, she's not stupid, she can see a very difficult road lies ahead. So as I say, they're not organizationally out there with flags and banners and committee meetings and so on, but the big changes for women in the 20th century and 21st century are certainly going on in them.
In some of the stories, you really make your reader work trying to figure out what's happening. Are you consciously trying to push those boundaries?
I think I would put it another way. I get myself, and I think to some extent I think it's true that writers write for ourselves. That's not all the truth, but it's part of it. I get tired of reading fiction in which everything is made so plain it's like a shopping list. And I really don't want to read, eggs, eggplant, butter, milk, Swiss chard. I really don't. You could even just say vegetables, and I could guess or imagine, So I like reading fiction in which I feel myself alert to what is on the page, and I really feel that I'm in that page, fully engaged in reading it, not just letting it slough over me. So I don't apologize for it. There are some things I know are a bit tricky, and they are, and I hope you'll enjoy them when you figure them out.
Now, your first book of short stories, The Animals in Their Elements, was published in 1987. That's mm-hmm. 25 years
ago. That's right, I know.
How has your approach to writing short stories changed over that time?
Well, I think I know a lot more about it than I did then. I sometimes find myself thinking, did I do that before? Actually, right now, I'm working on a story that I hope will be one of the 1970s left-wing stories. And it's about a man who was a participant in youth, and he's looking back from a much older age. And I was trying to figure out, how can I do this? How can I give both these perspectives? And I tried a number of really just intolerable arrangements. And I finally remembered, you wrote a story with footnotes a long time ago. Yes, you did. You wrote a story called The Young Girl Typist Ran to Smoldy. And it was about a political activist, and you put the commentary on her in the footnotes. I thought, I could do that with this. So I wish I'd thought of that sooner, because I would have saved myself kind of a fair amount of mangling around. But it's sort of, it's rediscovering a technique, I guess you could say.
Yeah. You know. Does the subject matter of a story lead to a particular treatment or a particular style? I mean, if you have a, you're writing about a character, do they then determine, okay, or?
Well, a lot of the stories in this book are actually about groups of characters. They're about people who are kind of enmeshed in a little web of other people, and they're not like the woman in Such Language, who is a mother and a wife and a daughter and has this friend circle of friends in the book club, and she is really quite enmeshed in all that. But there are a couple of stories. The last one, The Hunter, I would describe that as really quite a plain story. It's a straightforward chronological, and there's kind of no tricks in it. There really aren't. And I would say that's, for me, that felt more suited to a story that is strange anyway, and that I didn't want, I guess, to make any stranger. I wanted just to have it unfold and for the reader to be able to see the life of the grove manager and see the life of the animal and then briefly see the life of the person who changes things at the end. But sometimes I think you're really drawn, things have to be more complicated, like that To Be Queen story. I mean, I'm trying to cover in that story about 40 years of a family's life through the eyes of the youngest child, who is, I think, 4 when it begins and probably 44 when it ends, or roughly that. And, I mean, I'm not writing a 300-page novel, you know, I can't do that, so I have to employ a number of time chronology shifting techniques to make that passage of time apparent, as I wouldn't have to do if I were just writing his story, but I'm trying to write all of their story.
I guess one of the, you correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe the beauty of writing short stories is that you can do something totally different in story number 2 than you do in story number 1.
Oh,
so
yes.
You're like, you're not tied to, I've got this novel and I've got to keep this consistent style.
No, it's quite true. And the novel work that I have done, I mean, it is a bitter decision, a bitter discovery if you're on page 125 of a novel to find that you made a mistake on page 65, you know, because all that's going to have to cascade backward like that domino to fix it. And also a way that I like very much to work is to have several stories underway at the same time and to work on A for a while and then feel I've done about what I can and go on to B, etc. And when you come back to A after, you know, a couple of months or something, I mean, the, you know, the people who work in the back rooms that you don't know about have been busy. And also your eye is much sharper and you can look at the first paragraph and say, well, I don't need that. Gone. You know, and you couldn't see that before. So I like that way of working too.
I found the stories quite dark. I'm not sure if you would agree with me.
Well, I think we could say dark, yes. I was thinking about that afterwards, actually. Yes, I guess I'm... I'd say that there's darkness in almost all of them. But there's also a great deal of attention to the life of the senses, to light, to beauty, to unexpected discoveries, to flowers and animals and rain and love between people. All that's there. So, I mean, I don't think they're bleak. I think they may be. Maybe care is maybe bleak.
That's the story about a care home.
Yes, and that I think may indeed be called bleak. The others I don't think are bleak. They're certainly dark, but I think there's streaks of light.
You have an intriguing comment on your website about endings. Mm-hmm. You say that Robert Weaver, who was a well-known editor and champion of Canadian literature, changed the end of one of your stories. Tell me about that.
He used to run a program called, if I remember correctly, Anthology on CBC Radio, on which short stories were read aloud. And he took a couple of mine, and this is a long time back, and I don't remember. I think... There was a story of mine called To the Point, which was about an old farm woman who had a daughter who was mentally deficient and what that meant in the family's life. And he took the ending that I had proposed for that story, and he moved it up like about 20 lines or something. And I saw what a difference that made, that it wasn't just that kind of ending, like... ending the story with something sharp, but having the something sharp back away and then just having this kind of slow segue out.
You say a whimper rather than a bang.
Yeah, a whimper rather than a bang. Yes, yes. And I've come to think that's a good way. It's not always a good way. Like The Hunter ends with a bang, and the A couple of the other stories have quite decisive endings also, but more and more I like to have the last part of a story be more like just, if you pour water onto sand and for a while it runs over the top of it and then it just kind of disappears into it, something like that.
Okay.
I like to have that effect if I can.
A nice image.
Yeah, well, I think it works. But I think that's also how, I mean, in life there certainly are a lot of dramatic moments and moments when you realize with horror, delight, exactly what has happened. But there's a lot of things where you don't actually pick up on it until afterwards. And I think that's more what I'm aiming for.
After it's sunk in for
yes,
a bit.
Yes, exactly. After the water has sunk in. Yes.
Now, I know you're someone who doesn't show people your work in progress. That must make it all the more exciting when a new book comes out. How did the book launch go?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was such a happy event. I mean, there were over 100 people there, and we sold 83 books. And it was nice, too, because I didn't just do a street reading. I didn't want that. I wanted a little more variety. So Betsy Worland interviewed me briefly as part of the events, and there were lots of questions from the audience. And I just read two things quite briefly, and I think it went very well.
Excellent.
People had fun.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming down.
Thank you, Jane.
I've been speaking with Cynthia Flood. Her latest collection of short stories came out this week. It's titled Red Girl, Rat Boy, and it's published by Biblioasis. You can order the book through Book Warehouse or Pulp Fiction here in Vancouver, and of course it's also available through Chapters and Amazon. The title again, Red Girl, Rat Boy.